One male and one female in Darwin is more than sufficient to populate the entire top end of the Northern Territory.
The best thing is to get rid of them, get a big stick and hit them at it.
Practice of going out and getting one of these things and putting them into a billy, boiling it down and eating the residue, I think is absolutely repulsive.
When I'm driving the car, I have no hesitation of running over them whatsoever.
I couldn't do without them. They're friends.
I can recall quite vividly seeing cane grubs early in the morning. The beetle used to fly out early in the morning and land on the cane. The cane was weighted down with beetles. Trees surrounding the cane farms weighted down with beetles. Sometimes farmers would cut around about 800 tonne to 1,000 tonne, and the following year wouldn't cut a tonne at all hardly.
The situation really became desperate in the early 1930s due to the combined effect of grub attack and the effect of the depression on the world price of sugar. So something had to be done to control the grub if at all possible. And of course the farmers never let up on their demands on the sugar experiment station staff to do something about it. Well, in 1932 there was a world conference of sugar technologists held in Puerto Rico. And we were represented at that conference by the assistant director of the sugar experiment stations, Mr. Arthur Bell.
I believe this evidence shows that the Buffo marinus, or cane toad, can be effectively used as a biological control of the grayback grub and beetle. And I strongly advocate the effective use of this amphibian immigrant, which is doing its full share of benefit to our sugar industry.
And Arthur Bell brought back the suggestion that perhaps we could consider introducing the toad into this country from Hawaii. Montgomery was our entomologist at the time, and he was sent over to Hawaii to get a colony of toads together and bring them back to Australia and establish a colony in North Queensland. This he did very effectively. Over the long period, of course, it was necessary to keep moisture up to the toads in their crate to keep them alive. They couldn't feed them during the two-week trip that they would be experiencing getting down to Sydney from Hawaii. And then, of course, another 2 days to get them to Moringa in North Queensland before they could be put into a pond, into an environment that they could relish. Montgomery treated them very, very well. He built a very elaborate pool at Moringa with running water to encourage them to breed, and they responded to his treatment, and they began to breed very vigorously.
Yes, I got vivid memories when the toads were first brought to this place. They were brought here by a fellow called Neust in a couple of dishes. There's about 40 toads in number in all, and they were released in this particular spot over there. And of course my dad was an Irishman, and he was very, very pleased, and he was jubilant about the whole affair, and more so that he said this, and I quote, "We've got these bloody grubs by the balls this time, and we'll go on to bigger and brighter things." But tragically, we didn't have the grubs by the balls, they had us by the balls.
Amplexus is a sexual act where the male grasps the female, but of course first he's got to get his female. And after the rains, when you have big areas of temporary water, fresh water, the males will gather around the ponds and they'll call. And the call, of course, attracts the female. And it goes something like this. And I suppose the female picks the best or the sweetest of those calls. And when she approaches close, the male will then grasp her into amplexus. And he does that by getting his forearms, which you'll notice are very, very strong, and he pushes them into the side just under the ribs. And on the thumb there is a nuptial pad. This nuptial pad is very, very sticky, so that when he pushes the thumbs and his hands into the side of her abdominal cavity, the grip is very, very strong and firm. Of course, it's important that this grip be strong so that he doesn't fall off and so that other males too can't push him off. She takes him into the water and she exudes the eggs in long strands. And as they come out, the male releases sperm into the water, which then fertilises the eggs. And these eggs are either wrapped around vegetation, but usually it's just left to float in the water. One cane-toed female can lay up to 40,000 eggs in a summer. That's a large number of eggs. The theory going that they need the 40,000 just so two can survive to replace the female and the male. But if you see ponds where cane-toads have been breeding, more than two survive. The sides of the ponds are just black with young cane-toads. And from what I can see, a large number of those survive. The eggs stay in the water and then they start dividing and eventually they start to look like small tadpoles within the egg sac. The tadpoles, when they get sufficiently developed, start wriggling and they rupture the egg sac and they go into the water. As tadpoles, and the tadpole is a very distinctive tadpole. It's glossy black. No other Australian frog has a glossy black tadpole. And then in the water for about 4 to 5 weeks, it develops, the back legs come out, and then finally the front legs. Then the tail is reabsorbed, and they move onto the land as small toads.
Well, they've been here for 50 years, or a bit more, and look, there's just millions of them in this river. There's certainly no shortage of cane toads in the area. They have a tremendous success rate. They can lay tadpoles in small puddles, 15% seawater, clear running rivers like this, just about anywhere. Equally interesting is that these tadpoles, if you look at them very carefully, some of them are beginning to get legs, and they do that at a very, very small body size. The native tadpoles have to get much, much larger than these little fellas, and so they have to stay in the water a little bit longer than what a cane toad can. So cane toads get in fast, big numbers, they're out fast, and it aids their colonisation to a tremendous extent.
My first memory of the toad was the unusual noise that I heard in the billabong hole across from the house, and I did inquire from our pest board officer as to what the noise would be, and that was the giant toad.
They soon came out on the roads of a night, and it did look as though they would really be a terrible menace, that they would take possession of everything. You'd flatten them out with a car, and the stench from them would be like a school of mullet coming up the river.
When one species of cane beetle's in the cane fields, it just doesn't come in contact with the ground. And we know that cane toads can't fly. And when the other species of cane beetle is in the cane fields, it's there when there is no cover on the ground. And cane toads just aren't in cane fields when there isn't any cover. In short, the lifestyles of the cane beetles and the cane toads just didn't synchronise. It couldn't succeed.
They weren't much use at all as far as the cane beetle was concerned, but they did manage to get rid of a lot of stray dogs. The dogs would be attracted to these moving toads and grab them, and of course the Buffalo Merino's only protection was his poison sack, and he used to let the dogs have it, and eventually quite a few dogs died.
You know, looking back over the years and so forth, when you look at our imports, what we brought into Australia, this must have been a great country long before white man ever came to the joint. We brought in foxes and hares, and then to cap it all off, we bring this monstrous thing called a toad in.
An Adelaide man has been fined for his bizarre impersonation of two Queensland identities. Graham Cairns reports.
Police told the Port Adelaide Magistrates Court that 32-year-old Philip William Elliott was charged after he was found crouching on the side of a road at Birkenhead in Adelaide. Police say Elliott was jumping out onto the road into the path of oncoming cars. When he was questioned, he told them he was Sir Joe Bjorke-Peterson and a cane toad. He's pleaded guilty to the charge of disorderly behaviour and has been fined $50.
The cane toad spread faster and more widely than we'd anticipated in the first instance. And it wasn't long before it got into southern Queensland and then attracted a lot of attention from people who were not much interested in controlling cane grubs.
Queensland toads, Queensland toads, they're everywhere you are. They hop and they dance to every romance. Queensland toads, Queensland toads, they're everywhere you are. In the cane on the road, now always be Queensland
toad was introduced to about 8 or 9 different cane-growing regions, and since that time, they cover about 40% of the area of Queensland, a small portion of northern New South Wales, and they're moving over through the Gulf Country and a part of the Northern Territory.
It's difficult to go anywhere in Queensland without coming across references to or idolatry concerned with the cane toad, because they are ubiquitous. They're absolutely everywhere. People are brought up with them, I think. The Queenslanders are terribly protective of them, it would seem, that although something as obnoxious as the cane toad you would expect would have been eradicated by now, far from it. Because they've got them and nobody else has got them, much the same as they've got Joe and nobody else has got him yet, they, I think, regard them with sort of perverted reverence.
Hello.
Yeah, John?
Is this a tall toad story?
That's right. I was in Gordon Vale when they first released the cane toad.
Tell me about your recollections of those days.
Well, when they first released them, John.
Yes.
Now, you know what a kerosene tin is like.
It's yes.
Dropped straight in, they wouldn't go into a kerosene tin.
They would have eaten a cat.
That's right. They were that massive that if you put them on a big square mouth shovel, you couldn't lift them.
Oh.
That is true as I stand here.
You're not pulling my leg.
I am not. I can remember if it was yesterday.
There are still quite a large number of the toads around, but not as big as they used to be. But I still love the animal, and they give me a lot of enjoyment.
The term that's often used to describe that relationship that toads have with people is homophilic, which means that they just love people. And this is true in so many different ways, because we are just so kind to the toads. Usually we don't know that we're being so kind to them, but we provide places for them to live around our gardens, under garden gnomes, in pipes, under houses. We supply dinner for them many nights when we turn lights on, and the toads sit around the lights and they eat the insects that come along.
Well, as you see now, I have quite a few which I attract by using a light which is not very powerful, which attracts insects. And also, occasionally, I feed them whiskets.
Well, I started feeding toads whiskets because they started robbing the cat's dish of whiskets. So I used to put dishes of whiskets out. And they didn't come inside. So everybody was happy.
You can hear now a noise probably in the background, which is a toad, which is probably mating. And that's what I like about them.
The way they dart at things, the way they hide, and they're cunning enough to peek out behind things. They can be behind a leaf or something like that. If you're quick enough, you'll see their eyes watching wherever you go.
I definitely think they're a harmless animal and nobody's got any right to fear about them.
I'm not sure whether I would call them pets exactly, but they're mates, as far as I'm concerned.
We often see them mating right here in front of us on the lawn. They are a magnificent animal. If you just take the care and watch them and just see how they act under different circumstances.
That's the hard question, to think of them as friends. They're just friends. Friends, I suppose, because they're around the place. You get used to them, you look for them. They're singing, they're calling. It's not only a pleasant noise, it's a friendly noise. And I love it.
They are harmless, and they jump on us, jump on my feet, and they have no fear at all of coming near me or anybody that's with me.
Well, as a matter of fact, there are some people up here that would like the cane toad recognised for what it has done for Queensland particularly, and they were going to in fact erect a statue in its honour at Gordonvale on the road approaches to Cairns.
Well, the proposal to commemorate the cane toad was brought before the Bicentennial Committee of the Mulgrave Shire Council to record a unique part of North Australia's history. It was released from Moringa just outside Gordonvale. It was going to be a cane toad bust of around about a metre in height, sitting on a two-foot pedestal, so all up about 5 feet. And it was going to be a photographer's delight, and the kids could sit on its shoulders and whatnot. And all together, it was going to be, we thought, like the dog sitting on the tucker box 5 miles from Gundagai, and with that sort of tourist potential.
Oh, surely this bastard can't be in his right frame of mind. Fancy anyone wanted to erect a monument or a stone or some form of remembrance to this creature that had been brought in.
The council eventually came to the conclusion that it wasn't in their best interest to do so. Personally, I was extremely disappointed because I felt that this was our big chance to get a unique feature into our tourist development industry, our young developing tourist industry, where it was very special. And the fact that that didn't come to fruition, and I might add, with not spending a penny of ratepayers' money because it was a bicentennial project, I felt that we just missed the boat just a little bit.
Well, Bill Coben from the Department of Defence came and seen me and asked could I bind a book for Prince Charles and Lady Di for the wedding present. And he said he wanted something very special. And I thought, oh, cane toads. It took me about a month to more or less join 5-6 skins together. And that's the finished product. The Department of Defence received a letter from Buckingham Palace, and it reads, "We are both overwhelmed by your great kindness in thinking of sending us such a splendid wedding present. Thank you so much for taking all the trouble to find something which is so greatly appreciated and will bring so much pleasure to both us throughout our married life. Yours sincerely, Charles."
The cane toad poison is a mixture of several compounds, and one group of compounds are steroids, which affect heart muscle. And these are known as bufotoxins generally. Well, these, of course, are the toxins that kill.
As a mammalogist, I always had native animals around me that I was studying all the time. And I had a Western native cat that was effectively a pet. It had been with us for about 5 years and had been very important to me as a study animal. The moment we got to Brisbane, I let the thing out into the backyard, as I was accustomed to doing. It had the run of the outside and the inside. And the first thing it did, it rushed over and grabbed what, to me, in the dark, looked like a gigantic frog. Never even thought about what it was. And I didn't think anything more about it than that. That's a natural thing for a native cat to do. But about 2 minutes later, the animal was obviously in some kind of trouble. It was beginning to sort of stick its tongue out and salivating, rolling around on the ground. Within 20 minutes, that beautiful, unique animal, which I can only say I was totally in love with, this was something I was really wrapped up in, died in my arms in tetanic contractions.
The glands that produce the toxic material are located in the skin, but they're aggregated over the shoulder in this region here and here. And if you were to press these glands, well, you should cover your eyes with glasses if you're going to engage in this type of activity. Then if you were to press these glands here, there, you can see the venom shoot out, did you? There are numerous pores over those glands. Now, under pressure, that toxic material will shoot for about a metre. All in all, it's quite a cocktail of compounds, toxic compounds, and I think that people would do well to take care when handling toads.
Stay here, Eddie.
Hello?
Oh, hi, Wendy.
Oh, good. We've just been...
After all, people have been killed as a result of eating toads, both in Fiji and in the Philippines. There are well-recorded instances.
Taken Eddie down there a couple of times.
Oh.
As far as children are concerned, I would think that toads could be a real problem, particularly with babies who would be young children who are attracted by the hopping gait of the toad.
See you then, Wendy. Okay, bye.
Children being what they are will inevitably squeeze the toads and probably put them in their mouths and suck them and so forth. Well, the results could be quite disastrous.
The death of my native cat led me into a kind of an internal revenge against the cane toads when I began to come to grips with what was going on here. And every time I ended up in the bush somewhere in North Queensland, I felt it was a bit of responsibility here to reduce toad numbers. So I was running around at night, and I actually hit one of these cane toads with my geology pick. And hence, it's all my fault what happened, but nevertheless, it's an unforgettable experience. The moment my pick hit the back of the toad was instantly dead, but I felt like somebody in turn had hit me right in the face with a baseball bat, or like a bee had stung me in the eyeball. It was the most excruciating pain. I'd been hit in the eye by the material jettisoned out of the gland of this toad, and it was fully about 6 hours before I could actually begin to see out of that eye again. It's a dreadfully incapacitating experience, and one I would not want to go through ever again.
Don Juan says that some of the South American Indians, they when they get the mescaline out of the cactus, they say that and have it that you actually start to see the world through the consciousness of the cactus, that you start to see what the world looks like from the eyes of the cactus. And the toad's the same.
Bufotenine is the active ingredient found in the skin of the cane toad. It's listed as a dangerous drug in Schedule 2 of Queensland's Drugs Misuse Act. This means that it will attract a maximum penalty of life imprisonment. Under the Drugs Misuse Act, Queensland police have power to stop and detain people and search people they reasonably suspect are carrying the drug, and also to place tracking devices on vehicles they suspect to be carrying the drug.
I first found out about the use of the toxins from the cane toad back in the 1970s when I was stationed here as an investigating detective. We found that in places like the hippie communes around Cedar Bay and near Cairns, when heroin and other drugs weren't freely available, the next best alternative was to go out and get a cane toad and kill it, boil it down into a solution for 10 minutes, a little bit of water in it, and drink the residue. The effect that I found out that it had on them, from what I've been told, was that they had fantastic colour hallucinations. It warped their sense of time, and it also affected their mental capacities.
Use a little quantity at first, then larger, little bit first. I didn't like it that much.
A Townsville man has claimed that cane toads were responsible for the death of 22 of his large goldfish. Mr. Paul Devine, president of the Townsville Aquarium Society, has killed about 200 toads in an attempt to save his fish.
I think the biggest loss of goldfish I've had would be the latest time when I've lost a lot of these fish were with the cane toads. I lost about 30 goldfish in that time. The cane toads attack the goldfish in the pond as they swim around in the water. The cane toads attack them and try to get onto the fish and strangle them, and consequently they kill quite a few fish. So cane toads were looking for someone to something to ate with. I think that's what they were trying to do. In their frenzy to try and mate with them, they killed the other fish.
I've had them attempt to mate with my foot. I've had them attempt to amplex with my hand. But most often, I've seen them trying to amplex with hunks of mud.
Once I realised what the cause was, I immediately started getting rid of all these cane toads by killing the cane toads. I I got a piece of pipe and went about getting rid of all these cane toads. Quite a few of the cane toads were quite hard to kill, so I got a knife and put through the others. And after about a period of a week, I killed hundreds of cane toads. They're a bit of a rough bunch, but they're all right outside the pond, but not in the pond.
December 27, 1959, on a dirt road 3 miles east of Bingle Bay, an adult male toad was observed during amplexus with an adult female toad. At least three factors appeared quite unique about this situation. First, the female was dead, and had been for some time. It appeared as if she had fallen victim to a car. The limbs were already stiff, abdomen greatly distended, and the smell of putrefaction about her. Secondly, of course, it appears strange that the male should be so intent as to fail to observe the female's condition. Thirdly, the time and place we encountered this pair was unusual. It was at 1400 hours on a sunny afternoon, but even more interesting was the location, the middle of the road. The sexual drive appears strong enough in these toads to explain his accepting her, but his continuance through a possible 8 hours of daylight seems rather strange.
When we first came up north, we had friends who had two little girls, and these little girls had cane toads as pets. Instead of little dollies, they had these cane toads. They actually had little dresses made up for them, little skirts and beds in a doll's house. They used to dress the toads up and tuck them into their little beds. They used to carry them about, you know, wrapped up in a little baby bunting type of things like you do little dollies. These girls had names for them. They used to set up little tea parties. And they used to get these toads and scratch their tummy. And the things would lay back, obviously enjoying it, and stick their legs up into the air and just fall asleep. And they were the most contented, good little, I suppose, alive little dollies that any girl could like, but just so ugly.
If anyone could love a cane toad, it could only be another thing. Cause when you love a cane toad, you've gotta
this
love him,
warts and all. Hoppy, hoppy rider,
if your face was like a kiss cane you, toad, kiss and you wore down. It night and day, how would you feel if everyone who looked at you turned?
What I wonder what those buds are for. When
but
he's
you
got
can't
these
judge a book by its cover. If you try, you might discover you can be a cane toad lover. Then I wouldn't have to say, oh, if anyone could love a cane toad, it could only be another cane toad.
Get down again.
Cause when
no,
you
can't get up.
Toad,
no.
You gotta
you get
love
down,
it.
And then I tickle. Just be quiet.
When I tickle his tummy, he really likes it. But if I tickle his feet, he doesn't like it. Sometimes I call him Greeny, sometimes I call him Reddy, sometimes I call him Cane, almost Toad. Sometimes I call him Dairy Queen.
Well, there's a number of popular misconceptions about cane toads, one of which is that they feel disgusting to touch, but this isn't true at all. They feel quite dry, not slimy. The skin is slightly rough, but it does have a nice silky feeling, and you don't get warts from them. Another misconception is that just by touching them, the toads will exude their poison, and this is also not true. For a toad like this to exude any of its poison from its glands, it has to be severely harassed, for instance, being picked up in a dog's mouth and really severely shaken. I mean, to just handle a toad like this, doesn't cause it any distress at all. In fact, I think they quite like it.
Though a cane toad may look spiteful, and his manners may be frightful, he can be delightful in a toad sort.
I tell you what, they are getting smaller around here, like the gentleman said. Yeah. The day when we had rain here, we had about 12 or 14 of them on the driveway, and there was some kind of a little bug flying around.
Yeah.
And they were going after those bugs.
They're all fighting over the one
bug. They sure will eat cat food.
Yeah. Thank you for that call.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye, John.
Bye.
Yes, if the dogs and cats don't come straight away to be fed, they will be have all their food eaten up by cane toads. They'll just come in, they love anything, gravy and peas, it doesn't matter what it is. If the dog doesn't have it, it's gone by morning. The cane toads do not mess about. They get in for their bit and they eat it all up.
One of our ways of amusing ourselves at night time was to feed him with cigarettes. These Buffalo Merino toads could really smoke. They loved them.
It will clean up the slugs and the snails and a lot of other pests in the garden.
The cane toad like to going underneath lights. The lights reflect the moths, the insects. And this way, he goes underneath it and swallows them up. His reaction is the same thing, like a vacuum cleaner. If he sees something drop off, he goes and pick it up and swallow it in like a vacuum cleaner sucks it into his body.
Gut content analysis has shown that it'll eat virtually any living thing that's small enough to get in its mouth, from frogs to small birds to caterpillars to insects, crabs, all sorts of things. In fact, one researcher showed that the toad will even try and eat ping pong balls as they bounce past the front of them. So the general selection of food for a cane toad is if it moves or even if it doesn't move, if it can be fitted into its mouth, then it will attempt to eat it. We even found situations in which the wretched toads were eating the native animals. In one case, a toad was gutted and found to contain in its stomach a pygmy marsupial mouse. Now, this is a very rare native marsupial, which in fact I was studying as a student at that point, so I was very interested. One of these really important animals to me came out of the stomach of a cane toad. Anything that moved that was smaller than the cane toad was potential prey.
Cane toad's killing our wildlife not just by eating it, it's also killing it by being eaten by that wildlife. This death adder here, for example, has no sooner grasped this cane toad and it's dead.
The damage that he has inflicted on the natural environment itself, you take ibises, wild duck, they've all been affected by this fellow. As soon as they eat him, they die. I have seen snakes, taipans, death adders. You'd open them up, there'd be a toad inside them. He has definitely destroyed most of the natural habitat around this place.
It was quite common to have kookaburras, for example, brought in with a cane toad half down its throat in a way that a kookaburra could normally manage a native animal, but halfway through the process of swallowing this cane toad, it falls out of the tree stone dead, you know, just like it swallowed a cyanide pill. And this is the thing that kind of scared us. These little walking disaster areas, unlike any other kind of prey that the native animals were accustomed to, they gave the native animals no second chance, no warning, no bitter taste that makes you drop the animal. If they bit it firmly enough behind the head, they were dead. So from that point of view, it's a disaster because it's an introduction of an animal that the bush simply had no experience with and couldn't cope with.
He poses a bigger menace as the German army did in World War II. The invasion is on, and I appeal to everybody to, wherever you see a toad, have no hesitation running over and killing the monster.
Well, I line them up with the driver's side front wheel, and it's not quite as easy as it used to be with the big fat tyres on the RX4 Mazda, but I seem to be able to get most of the ones I line up on the right-hand side of the road. I know I've made a clean kill, particularly if the toad is actually facing towards the vehicle, because the air that's inside the toad is trapped within the head and blown out towards the back end, and the toad really goes off with a bang like a balloon going off. Well, I really go out of my way to run over cane toads basically because I have a very profound love of the wildlife that occurs here naturally. If it was possible to remove them and totally eradicate them from Australia, and I was capable of doing it, I would spend a lifetime doing exactly that.
Anyone tried to hurt one of my toads, there'd be a lot of noise and they'd realise I wasn't a lady.
I must confess I don't like the look of the animal. I can't have any strong affection for him, but I think I've got to give him credit for doing a good job for us.
The cane toad is really an excellent invasion machine. It is made in many ways so that it can move rapidly into an area. It is able to move human-assisted as well as under its own steam. It reproduces incredibly well. It can produce 30,000 eggs per year, start producing after 1 year, and maybe produce for 16 years. It can eat virtually anything, so food requirements aren't really a problem. It can live in most habitats as long as there's some water. And it has got excellent predator defence because it is poisonous at most stages of its life cycle, so nothing can really touch it. It's a great machine indeed.
These eight toads, at one sitting, can produce 120,000 eggs. They might do that two, perhaps even three times a year. Come the wet season in the top end in the world-famous wetlands, you're going to have nothing but a sea of little black tadpoles. In the dry season, those famous worldwide billabongs are going to be seething with hundreds of thousands of toads just like these. From there, the total conquest of northern Australia is but a hop, step and a jump.
Our studies would indicate that it's possible that the toad will spread right across the northern part of the Northern Territory, as far as the Kimberley region in northern Western Australia, down the coast of Queensland and as far south into New South Wales as possibly Coffs Harbour.
It's entirely possible when you consider what were previously thought to be the limitations on the toad and what it seems to be able to do now, that the toad is rapidly adapting to conditions that previously might have constrained it.
If the toad is coming in, basically it's going to come in. I can't see any simple way of stopping it at present.
So what we're going to gradually see is one of these classic human disasters of a monoculture, gradually a single species replacing, and a single introduced species replacing many, many natural species. So that what's really happening here is that an ecosystem is at threat by being chopped away at the base. And that will have repercussions all the way up through the whole of the food chain in which the toad has insinuated itself, so that we don't really know what the full effects ultimately will be, but already we've seen that some of the dominant carnivores in those ecosystems are probably going to vanish.
At the moment, we have absolutely no way of controlling the cane toad.